ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look. Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them. And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week I have a two-part series. I sit down with Classic League. Now, if you're from the DFW Metroplex, this is one of the oldest, longest leagues in the Metroplex. It is one of the few that I honestly feel has a fighting chance to promote the best talent in the country if people follow this model instead of doing what every other league does. Promotion and relegation, and the importance of it. Now, I'm not going to share too much here in the beginning, but this was a fun conversation for me as a parent. I do have to apologize to Rob and Joe because I kind of pushed hard on the officiating stuff because at the time we just joined the league and there's all these things that pop up and they're all fresh on my mind. But at the end of the day, I am sorry to them for that, and I hope you all will enjoy this two-part series with Classic League. Let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
I am Suma Napper, and I'm the Executive Director of the Chamber Classic Soccer Alliance, Inc. I started working here in 2009. I took over for the last executive director. I have four boys that have played in the league. Two of them went on to play D1 soccer. One went on to play club soccer, and the other one played football probably halfway through his soccer career and decided to give up soccer. And now I've got grandkids playing soccer.
My name is Joe Rapolo, and I'm the vice chairman of commissioners.
For Classic League, like many kids growing up in the Texas, North Texas area, I played soccer up till high school, and then I decided I needed to play football and run track and do all those things, but quickly got back into soccer, playing intramurals in college, and after college, played a lot of recreational indoor, and I've always had an affinity for the game. So even my mid-50s now, I still play in an over-50 men's league. But really what drew me back into soccer was having my son, who is now a sophomore in college, pick up the game at an early age, and he showed an affinity for it. And while attending got asked to manage his FC Dallas team. I was there when we took them through this qualifying tournament with Classic League and began managing U10 year and all the way up through U8. About a year into that, I met Suma. Shortly thereafter, she asked me to be part of the board. I started as a young member on the board as a commissioner over the U11 age group. And to this day, I still manage the U11 age group as well as overseeing all of the age group commissioners for the league. And then when my son was winding his career down and I knew he was going off to college and not going to continue playing, I picked up refereeing. And so now I also referee for the league.
My name is Rob Thomas. I am currently the U18 commissioner for Boys Classic League. I'm also the vice chair of appeals and discipline for the league. I'm also a USSF referee here in North Texas. I did not play soccer growing up. We lived quite a ways from town, and my parents were not about to drive us back to town so that we could have any sort of organized team sport. So I grew up rodeoing, which is, I'm originally from Colorado and have a ranching background. I grew up rodeoing. I rodeoed in high school all the way through college. Amateur after that, still do some open team ropings from time to time, but I was also a judge for rodeo back then. I got to the point where I couldn't make money rodeoing, but I could make money judging. I got into the officiating side from there. We got into soccer with my son, who had no interest in horses when he was born. And so from the age of 3, he had better foot eye coordination than he had hand eye coordination. And so soccer became his sport. He's played in the Classic League ever since U11. We also play in U.S. club side as well. He picked up refereeing a couple years ago because I was doing it. And I think that he's a senior this year. He's going to go on to college, and that'll probably be the end of his soccer career.
Thank you. So I love the history of everything. So let's talk about the history of Classic League. So when did Classic League start and how has it progressed over the years on a high level?
Okay, I'm going to take a shot at this one. Did a bunch of research on it. A lot of the older guys that I know, they think the Classic League started in about 1978. And the reason I say think is we did get hit by the tornado in 2018. And all our documentation was basically annihilated. I've got some, but not all of it, a lot of the past history. So we started off in 1978 as the Mr. Pibb Invitational League. And then about, I'd say, 10 years later, it went to being called the Coca-Cola Classic League. When it did start, it was only one division of 9 teams. And that would be like the 67, 68, 69 birth years. Then it was the Coca-Cola Classic League. And at that point, my kids played. My oldest son started playing in 1991. And at that time, there was 2 divisions, one division of 10 and one division of 6. And they played at Walker and Anderson Bonner. The older teams prior to 1991 used to play at UTD and Walker. My kids played for a club that doesn't exist anymore, which was the Comets, which was one of the bigger clubs. I was the president of the club for 4 or 5 years. I was treasurer before that. I've also been very involved with the Dallas Cup, and one of the reasons I love Dallas Cup is because everybody in there comes from different clubs. And they take their club hat off, and we're all in there just for the kids. This will be the 46th year for Dallas Cup 2025 will be their 46th year. And we're about 46 years old as well. We started playing at Richland in 1993. We played at Walker before that. And then in 2008, we played at Toyota and Richland. And in 2010, MoneyGram. We were the anchors of MoneyGram when they opened up MoneyGram. They asked us to be the first ones out there. And so we went ahead and did that. And we have signed, we signed a 3-year contract at that point. And then we signed in 2013, 2018, and then this year we signed another contract with. We've been able to expand our league from the original 9 teams to 16 teams to 20 teams to 30 teams to 40 teams in the younger divisions. We've been able to do that by having access to MoneyGram and Toyota at one point. In 2009 was when the Academy League came in. And that's when we changed from giving the teams the buys to the clubs the buys, because we had the 4 major clubs at that time, Andromeda, FC Dallas, Texans, and Solar. They were considered part of the Academy, so they were basically removing their top teams out of our league, and we needed them to build their second teams into the top teams. We went with a club buy so that they could hold their buys. We did that for purposes of retaining their teams and then being able to build their teams back up. We have 4 people that work for us in the office. One that is a part-timer that handles all the Classic League stuff. We've got a bookkeeper. We've got myself. And then I've got a registrar. And she came to us through our merger with Dallas North Association. Every league has to be associated with an association under North Texas rules. We merged in 2006 with North Dallas North Association, and we have our own registrar who registers players, and that helps our teams having the registrar right in-house.
With such a rich history in the DFW Metroplex with soccer, have players left our DFW community that have gone through Classic League and continued the career outside of club soccer?
Yes, we've been privileged to have many players come through the Classic League and go on to play professionally or win a national championship in college. Some of the names that people can identify with could be Jeff Agus, one of the first to come out of the Classic League, Chad Deering, Curtis Partain, Omar Gonzalez, Kenny Cooper, and of course everybody knows Clint Dempsey, Drew Moore, Jose Burciaga. Many of these guys play professionally and now are coaching in the Classic League as well. Also in the other leagues that are in Dallas, many of those coaches have either played or coached in the Classic League. So there are a lot of people in Dallas that have come through the Classic League and continue to use soccer as an avenue to help our youth. We are not the boys' Classic League. Although we are a boys' league by going out there and looking, when the original folks that started this league, they had anticipated it being boys and girls at one point. And so they just called it the Classic League to have that opening if there's girls that wanted to play in our league. And trust me, we have several girls on teams. Alpha Forms for One has 2 or 3 girls on the team I was watching the other day. We've had a girls team try out and actually make our league and played in it for 2 years before the physicality of it going to work out. We are really not connected with the Girls Classic League. They do call themselves the Classic League too, but there's no affiliation. They have different rules. They have different divisions, everything's different. They play at UTD and Railroad. We play at Richland and MoneyGram. But we have that opening always to invite females into the league and also to maybe one day have our a female league associated with us.
Awesome. I did not know that. I always assumed Classic League was just for boys and then there's Girls Classic League on the other side. A new wrinkle in my brain, because this is where having side conversations on the sideline with parents, we always joke. It's like, I would always assume they would be one underneath one umbrella, but learning today that they're two they really
do,
interesting.
They do call themselves the Girls Classic League. We don't call ourselves the Boys Classic League. People do right. say Boys Classic League, but if you look at all our documentation, it says Classic League. We broke off.
CL.
Yeah, we're called the Classic League, and now we're Chamber Classic Soccer Alliance, and that was when we broke off of Chamber. We always had a member of the Chamber on our board, and they just at that point said, you guys are doing great on your own, and we split up, and there that was in 2004.
That's impressive. Now, you talked about the Dallas Cup. There's a rich history of the Dallas Cup in the Metroplex. It is one of the most talked about tournaments every year. It is one of the most, still one of the most prestigious tournaments that you can get yourself into. How are you guys affiliated and work with the Dallas Cup then?
In today's world, because there are so many other leagues out there, our top two finishers get an automatic bid into Dallas Cup. They still have to pay registration and do all the things that the other teams do, but they actually earn that spot. I actually worked for Dallas Cup. I told you I didn't start working here until 2009. I worked at Dallas Cup in the registration section from 1992 to 2019, 27 years. I have a Volunteer of the Year award under my belt as well. I didn't take over the registration until... And Joe, didn't you work for me in registration?
I did.
Did I drag you into that too?
You dragged me in. I was part of an FC Dallas team, so we were obligated to fill a number of volunteer shifts. And so since I knew you through the Classic League, you said, well, come do your shifts with me at registration.
When my boys played in the 90s, the Classic League, Dallas Cup started in 1980, and it was started by a club called the Longhorns, probably one of the biggest clubs. In fact, I was thinking about all of this morning. Longhorns, Comets, Andromeda, some of the bigger clubs do not exist anymore. They've been swallowed up. Comets were swallowed up by FC Dallas. Longhorns went to FC Premier, and then now FC Premier is Cross City, which is now Hornets. It's hard to keep up with all of that. When my boys played, it was the top four finishers in Division One, and the Longhorns got the fifth spot just because they were the sponsor club. In today's world, we have so many other leagues, so they're taking top finishers from other leagues as well as ours, so we're down to two. And this year, they're going to start U10 and U11 division for Dallas Cup. They're going to expand on Dallas Cup, so we'll have U10 and U11, and our league is going to get two spots in those two age groups as well.
That's awesome. I find the Dallas Cup very fascinating, coming from a non-soccer world background, and you have all these teams coming here internationally, and it's great that you guys are able to be affiliated and have teams from your league go play in it and have a chance to go play in it. I never understood how teams got in it from it locally. So
Classic League is a sponsor of, because we started together. We started a couple of years before Dallas Cup. So we're a sponsor of the Dallas Cup. They get permission from us to use the fields and to actually have the tournament. It's had its ups and downs, just like all of us do. Obviously, after 9/11, nobody wanted to come here. They brought in Gordon Jago, who basically turned it back around with all his connections in Europe. And he ran with it for quite a while. And it was going very, very strong. And then COVID hit, and they lost it in 2020. They brought it back in 2021, and they've just been eking back in. I think last year was much better. I'm hoping this year we're just starting to build back up where people are comfortable getting here. And the main teams from Europe that we wanted to come are coming back now. So that was a lot of Gordon Jago's doing. He really, it could have fallen apart after 9/11. It really could have.
One of my greatest disappointments as a soccer parent and a team manager was in 2020. There was a lottery draw to see which team from outside of the country you got to host at your home. And I thought it'd be really neat to have Europeans, but I drew Schalke. We were going to have the German boys come and stay at our house. And all of our homes, and we had planned all the different activities. And of course, about 6 weeks before the tournament, they had to tell us, we got the word, we're not coming. And then of course, we know the whole world shut down. I think one of the highlights, I think that everybody who's participating in the Dallas Cup that's local is hosting those teams coming over, the internationals, and the lifelong friendships that they make.
And having all my boys that have played, we've hosted Morocco, we've hosted the Czechoslovakians, we've hosted the Germans, we've hosted the English. So we've had so many, and there were a couple years, with Corinthians out of South America. At some points, I had two different teams at my house. Each one, the way they divided up, each family gets two kids. So I would have two for one child and two for the other. It was a lot of sardine kind of packing in one house, but it was such a great experience for the boys. And I think that's the main thing. They're still playing soccer just like they play soccer in the league, but it's just giving your kids an opportunity to be around kids that aren't like them, that don't speak the same language. And it's amazing how through soccer they all communicate. And it's such a great experience for those kids and for the Dallas kid.
That's awesome. So as you have the affiliation with Dallas Cup, what other leagues or other programs do you all have affiliations with?
Through North Texas Soccer and through the U.S. YS, Classic League teams can be selected to play in the Frontier Conference, and that's a regional league. Now, it changes year to year depending on the other associations, but typically when my son was playing, it was typically the top four teams out of Division I Classic, typically the top four South Texas teams, and then some combination of Oklahoma and Arkansas. And so that provided for those teams. Now, you didn't have to accept that, but it was a great honor to be able to go participate. The travel was limited to 2 weekends. So you would only basically have to travel twice during that whole period of time. And Classic League does work around those schedules. From there, my son's team participated also in National League Pro. And so there's your national affiliation. So that's even beyond. So you've got to be typically one of the top performing Frontier Conference teams to get selected National League Pro. And that was also 2 weekends, typically one in the early December and one in early February. We usually went to either Mesa, Arizona, Orlando, or Sarasota. One of those Sarasota weekends was the weekend we had the big ice storm come to Dallas. I had six boys all ready to go to the airport with me Friday morning to fly out, and the ice storm socked us in. So it was going to sock us in Saturday. So I remember going down to Love Field, renting a van and driving seven boys across the country, 17 and a half hours to Sarasota so they could basically go out there super tired and not win a game the entire time we were there that weekend. But it was a little rough on their legs being cramped up in a van. So those are the leagues that people can ascend to through the USYS pathway. Fortunately, my son played on a team that was able to do that.
That's really impressive that you're able to have those opportunities through the Classic League. I feel a lot of leagues are set up, and no matter how well you do in the league, you could be the top team, you're just finished at the league. And you guys have the opportunity to go on a larger regional than a national level, which is awesome to hear. And it's done through promotion and not just paying your way into the league.
They can also go, they win state cup, they can go and play at regionals and then nationals, which two of my sons had the opportunity to do. And that was that's of course regionals. State cup is here, regionals is at one other location, usually the end of June, and then nationals are in July. And so it doesn't conflict with league play or anything, but those were really amazing opportunities for the young kids.
Now, speaking of on the national level really quickly, I just thought about this. It's showcases. Do you guys have opportunities for your teams to qualify for showcases and get into those opportunities? Because, I mean, as you get past the age of U14 and up, that those become critical if they want to go to college.
Usually our top teams can get into all the showcases. That the Classic League has enough of a reputation that our top guys have kids playing right now. My kids always got into Disney or Tampa Bay Sun Bowl, or they were one either first or second in the league their whole careers.
But Suma, talk about our showcase.
We do. We have our own college showcase in December. I didn't even talk about the Senior Bowl either. the U19s, let's start with them. The U19s only play a jumbo fall season because what we found, and we kept trying to bring it back, is a spring season for the U19s, but they were too busy. Either they decided not to play soccer in college or they wanted to enjoy their senior year. I don't want to use the word party, but they wanted to have a good time their last semester. As they weren't showing up to games, we'd have six guys out there. And so we decided to do a jumbo season in the fall. They play three more games than everybody else does in the fall. And then we had a group come in and offer to evaluate, actually the coaches of the U19s nominate three players from their team who they think are worthy. And these other guys go in and evaluate, and they put together a East and a West team, and they have a Senior Bowl. It's usually the first weekend of December, and it's in the middle of our college showcase that we do on our fields. And this has been a big hit because a lot of these kids aren't going to go on and play in college, and they're never going to have the experience like that my kids had while they were there, where it was senior night, and they presented flowers to their, you know, parents. And I mean, it's really a big deal. And there's MVP awards. And then they pick out of those two teams the best players and they take them to Portugal in March. They go to Portugal in March. And we had a couple last year that actually got offers to stay in Portugal and play, or go back to Portugal and play after that opportunity. And I do want to say that the Classic League is a nonprofit, it has always been a nonprofit. In the days that my boys played in the 90s and early 2000s, all the clubs were nonprofit. That's not the case anymore. They're all for-profit. Things have evolved because of that. But we've tried to stay nonprofit and stay relevant.
I love that. You have your college showcase that you have. So how big is this showcase? How many colleges come and see players, or how is it set up?
We started it last year, was our first year with the showcase, the Senior Bowl. This will be our third year, and we actually are trying to keep it small. And we ended up having more teams last year than we wanted, and so this year I think they're shooting for 48. Last year we had 32. We had all kinds of coaches, because one of the comments that they made was, it's so nice to come and be able to see all the good players in one place. Whereas, and on they're talking more about the Senior Bowl in this one, our top players are all on the field and on those two teams. They can just come and evaluate them. The other thing that makes it very interesting, them, it's one thing to play with your team and know that guy's going to get that pass or make that pass or whatever, but to go onto the field with 18 players on each team that don't know each other and watch them play, you really are going to be able to see who are your really good soccer players, because they're going to make things happen with players they don't know. And the coaches thought that the Senior Bowl was one of the best ideas we'd come up with, and they loved that. So last year, this year will be interesting to see how many more coaches we get there. Each year, it's a building process. But the Senior Bowl last year, we had a lot more coaches than we had the year before. It's been building. But it also doesn't require travel. Our teams are here. It's right. We're doing this in your backyard. It's very convenient.
Right, they all come here.
Because a lot of people don't want to. Their kids may be looking D2, D3, junior college. They don't really care to go to Disney and pay all that money and hotels and all that at Christmas time. They'd rather be here, and maybe that JUCO college, hey, Richland College coach picks me up. It's an avenue for some of the kids that still want to go on and play and maybe not D1. It's a great place for them to be seen.
Awesome. Now let's talk a little bit more about how you get into Classic League. This, as a parent going through the process for the first time this year, I know you guys have, for the U11, you have a tournament, and you have to place in the first weekend of the tournament. If you're the top team in your bracket, if I'm remembering right, you make the D1. Then if you're the top next weekend, it is everyone else that's left, and the top, what is it? You have four brackets, so the top three teams in each bracket dictates where you sit in each division. So if you have a team that's coming in that's not U11, how do they get into Classic League?
Let me go back to the QT, because there's been, just like with everything in this league, we're a nonprofit. Our board is all volunteers. They don't get paid. They're parents who take their club hat off when they walk in the door. And so each year we listen to what people have to say. And the QT, and my son was a victim of it his first year, you can have one bad game and you don't get in the league. Or it was a one weekend thing. You had a bad game, or you had some guy score a lucky goal and you can't score the rest of the game because they're packing the box. And all of a sudden you're in Division II or you're out of the league. So one of the things that we've done over the last several years is make it a two-weekend operation, so that you might not get into D1 that first season because you had a bad game, but you definitely still get in the league. And I'm watching the U11 standings now, and I have two teams right now that I had seeded in our top 10 that didn't make it in, and they're sitting at the top of D2. So they obviously had a bad game, didn't get in, but they're going to get to move up in the spring.
One of the joys I always have in the middle of the summer is sitting down with Suma as the U11 commissioner and helping run the tournament, is us trying to take 10-year-olds and try to accurately predict how they might play, maybe even with a 7 o'clock game, when oftentimes people are traveling. A lot of our players that have families, let's say in Mexico, you'll find out four of their best players are out of town that weekend. And so we're trying to do our best to put these teams in some semblance of seeding, and then, of course, trying to even factor in player movement. We've cultivated a lot of relationship with coaches and team administrators, and we'll reach out. We'll find out, hey, how's this team looking this year? Is this going to be your top team? And we'll tell us about the other teams that you're playing against. And the best attempt that we can to accurately seed these teams. And then we've got to put them on the field and let them play. And that's what I love is about competition, right? You can have all the, that's what makes the NCAA basketball tournament great, is all the one seeds knocking off the 16 seeds. Of course, it's with 10-year-olds, that's going to happen. We're typically trying to take in that format that you mentioned, Ian, that can change on a year-to-year basis depending on how many teams that we have. So yeah. Sometimes the math of how to put the brackets together, sometimes we have two teams left over and we have two brackets of five where every other bracket's four. We're not going to turn any teams away as long as they register prior to the deadline. That's always a great weekend to watch these kids play and the excitement. It's also meaningful in that the teams over the years that maybe haven't gotten in, they learn a very tough lesson about competition. And I've seen parents and kids and crying. And I always say, listen, U11 year is really just a learning year anyway. Go make your team strong, come back, and you can qualify. So to your point, in the spring, typically for Memorial Weekend, we have what we call the Challenge Tournament. And that allows, so basically the buys for every age group, that there's six spots, and Suma, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's six open spots that teams do not achieve a buy for. And they can come from whatever league, as long as they're registered through North Texas, and play in that tournament with their playing roster that they had on April the 1st. So they can't add guest players. They have to play with the team that they have and qualify to get into the league that way. And I know you're going to talk about promotion and relegation, but it's very significant. If we have, let's say, a team left and went to another league, maybe thinking the grass was greener, and they realize that maybe their families don't want to travel, or they like the competition and they like the fields, they like the referee, whatever they like about our league, and they want to come back, or they want to come for the first time, they can rise through with a three-division system. They come in, they're coming in at D3. By the end of the fall season, be in D2, and starting the next year, they can be in D1. So it's not a multi-year process to get back to the very top.
And it used to be. It used to be relegation was only done at the end of the year. That would mean if you came in that year in D3, then the best you could do is D2, and then it would be D1 3 years later. So it's an improvement that we thought, so it would be more fluid. We actually did three teams for a while, but we got complaints from the guys that like to play in D2 and are comfortable in D2 that you're basically taking three teams out, leaving only four in, and they like to play the competitions. We went back to two teams only, but we're still doing it after each season.
Now you're calling a season the 9-week season, or is that
9-game season? Yes.
Fall and spring.
Fall and spring.
Where it used to be one season in the old days.
Well, you're referring to the older teams that they'll be finished playing their 9-game season on Monday the 14th. And we'll promote and relegate the 15, 16, 17s, and 18s on Monday. And they will play 3 spring games in the fall. 3 of their spring games. 3 of their 9 games will be played in the fall. And the reason for that is high school. High school gets in the way of our spring season. And we tried to have the kids play, and their high school coaches said, no, you're not playing club games during high school season. And to not cause more pressure on the kids, we decided, okay, we'll play three games in spring, and then we'll only have 3 games in fall, and we only have to play 6 in the spring. We start those games the 3rd week of March to avoid all the high school play. And we need to get them in before the end of April, because once leagues is over, we go to State Cup, which is the 1st week of May.
Because we're juggling Dallas Cup and then State Cup as well.
We lose the whole week.
We're in the rainy season, typically in the spring.
Very rainy.
Right.
But
and depending on how the field's conditions are and how well they drain, it dictates if you're able to play on the field.
We give up 2 weekends, basically, with Dallas Cup. Those are 2 weekends we can't use the fields. It's right after that we bring the high school kids in. We start the younger kids early February, and usually they're done. The 11s through 14s are done by the time the older kids. So it's easy to double up, have a game on Saturday and Sunday, have a game during the week for the older kids to get them in, get their spring games in, and not conflict with their high school seasons. I don't think the kids should have to make a choice.
You know? That's very kind, because a lot of leagues don't care.
My kids love playing high school, and Joe can attest to it at Jesuit. They have a great coach. They got to play with their friends and all their teammates that didn't think they were athletes because they weren't playing football or basketball or baseball at Jesuit. They get to realize what these kids are doing on the weekends, that they're playing hardcore soccer the rest of the year. So they get to see how good they are, and to have their classmates come out and root for them. Son scored the goal at the last time I was at the big tournament at Jesuit. It was a big deal for him. All his classmates were out there watching. So it was his senior year. It was great.
I like hearing that. So I'm trying to lay this out correctly for my train of thought. So you have the qualifying weekend to get into the league at U11. Then you have the Challengers Cup for teams that want to get into Classic League that are not part of, that are beyond U11. Mm-hmm. As a parent, I think that's exciting to hear, because at the end of the day, it truly is the meaning of competition that it should be. It's the biggest joke. American football is the biggest joke because there's no promotion and relegation in it. And then you have the MLS that follows suit with that same thing. I would love to see our own pyramid with promotion relegation, and seeing some of these MLS teams that don't do well go down and play in a lower league, whatever it may be, USL Champions or USL League One, and see what happens, because at the end of the day, it would be great to see some changes happen, because it actually promotes true competition. I don't know if these big club owners would want to give up millions of dollars.
I think that's your answer right there.
There's your answer.
When they have to pay $500 million. Mm-hmm. To get into it, I always joke that they should, for the MLS, is take the USL 3 leagues that they have, even MLS Next Pro, and have a promotion relegation. I know that when Barcelona plays in Liga 1 and they play in Liga 2, the players that played in the lower divisions, the team doesn't leave the division, it is the players leave. And you don't see that happening here in the States. But at the younger level, Classic League is the prime example of what we're talking about right now. Has this, and it's great to see the spirit of competition is there.
Makes the coaches work for their living, basically. They have to coach. They just can't say, okay, well, we're in here, we just can relax. And he has to go out and have his practices. He has to do his thing, too. It puts pressure on the coaches to do a good job and develop
it
the players.
If I can touch on that, Ian, you know, it may be one potential downside is the fact that, you know, at a young age, when player development should be the most important thing when you're 10, 11, 12 years old and beyond, but certainly then, and there is a pressure to win. I remember my son had got caught in the, he was U11 on the 11v11 fields prior to the age, the birth year age change. And so the next year, they lost all the old, he was an 05, they lost all the older, the 04s off that team. And we had to cobble together a team and go back through qualifying Classic League. We got into Classic League D1 by the skin of our teeth. And we finished, back when we had a 20-team Division I, we finished very low on the table. So it was not a great year, obviously, for the team. So the U13 year, we spent in Division II. We rose to the top of Division II. We spent the entire rest of his playing career as a Division I team. So it's not the end of the world to get relegated down. Because what I saw, and I saw this with your boys playing their night, is if you're taught to play the right way, you're taught to, and that can hurt you early on, because if you make that pass to start over and go back, and they've got some big, strong forward who's can muscle your defender off the ball or pick off the pass, even though the thought process was correct, you might lose some games that way. But ultimately, the player, the bodies are going to mature, but the IQ, the style of play is going to translate well as you get into the U13, 14, 15 years and beyond. Yes, we do have that element of competition, but it's not the end of the world, because you can go down and come back up relatively quickly. And if you're playing the right way, you'll rise to the top.
You talk about the development. I always use my daughter's U16, U7. She's a 2017, and they play a diamond. And when they play teams that play herd soccer, they get walloped, because they know they aren't supposed to go play in a herd. But when they start actually playing teams that are actually playing what I call real soccer, they actually accelerate. They do great. They're now starting to win matches because teams are no longer playing herd soccer. And I love watching this. And you can just watch it across all the soccer fields where all the teams are. And as you play teams over time, you see that their IQ is growing and maturing. And from the sounds of it, you guys allow, because of the promotion relegation, it does allow for that IQ to develop in the right format. And I think having your divisions, I look at my son's team, they're in a D2 division right now. I honestly think that might be the right spot. Maybe if they went down to D3, I don't know what teams are down there and how well they would do there, but it is all about learning and growing and developing. And I think that's key. And I think the way you guys have your structure with your promotion relegation truly allows kids to play at the levels they need, versus where it's 16 teams in a league and you might get teams that wallop every single weekend and a team that just gets crushed and kids quit soccer because the format that you guys have allows not that for to happen from the sounds.
My sons, my first son, when my first experience, they were seeded number one in the QT qualifying tournament, and they got knocked out and they were in D2. So they had to spend the whole year in D2. But our coach from the start said, I don't care about winning, we're going to develop. And we were able to do that in D2. We would not have been able to do that in D1 because the pressure to win was going to always be there. We had to go through the qualifying tournament again the next year to get back into D1, and we were able to do so. And in doing so, we were able to win or finish in second place for the next 8 years of this team's career. So that year in U11 was strictly a developmental year that they were able to, he was able to develop 18 players, not just the 11 that were on the field. And that's the other thing that I see that's changed over the years, like from when my kids played. When my son graduated, I'd say 17 of the 18 players were original players. They literally didn't go where the grass was greener. They stuck it out. And I'm going to tell you, at one point, he could have easily cut my child. He didn't go through puberty till he was almost 15, 16. He was real late developing. He was one of the best players at U11, one of the worst players at U15, 16, and then he goes off to get a D1 scholarship. It's partly the players that are not loyal anymore, but also the coaches aren't loyal anymore. It's like they want to go grab this player from this team or that player from that team. And I think that's hurting soccer a little bit. It's concerning.
We always joke when we have tried out, and my wife brings it up every single time, don't show me who's at your practice. trying out, show me who's actually on your current roster. I want to know who they are, because at the end of the day, if you only have four kids left of your 16 kids on your roster, that there's something going on there. Either you don't lose that many players because they're trophy chasing. There's something else going on. And as a parent, that's a telltale sign. It should be a telltale sign what's going on, because you don't know who's truly on the roster at tryouts. And I find it comical.
Right.
That's a whole topic we could get on for days. With the league and everything you have going on, I'm going to take a step back, because we've talked about your playing locations. You guys play at Richland College, MoneyGram. So what is your relationship with Richland College? Is it strictly just field access, or is there something more, access to coaching and having players being seen and possibly playing for Richland, or is it just field access?
The Richland coaches have complete access to our teams. They come out there, they watch them. Obviously, it takes the initiative has to come from the player reaching out to Richland, and the coach will come out there. He comes out to our Senior Bowl. Obviously, Richland's won 12 championships now in a row. Not in a row, but almost in a row. He's had a few hiccups along the way, so he's got a very solid program. He's putting a lot of these kids. In fact, one of his kids from 2 years ago went to play for Syracuse, who won D1. They won the national championship. So he's got he's got a bunch of players playing for SMU right now. He does an excellent job. Richland decided that we looked like a community service project to them when I guess they came out in 1991 and started negotiating this deal. We built the fields. We do all the work on them. Our budget's over, what did I write down? $682,000 a year on the fields. We do take in a maintenance fee that is $345,000, so there's quite a bit of difference in those two numbers. And obviously the league fees pay for part of that as well. So we maintain the fields. We have four members on our staff. We have a supervisor, assistant supervisor, actually five members now, a full-time guy and two part-time guys. And then our sixth person is a consultant that we brought on a year ago March, who's actually guiding them on how to do fields. He does MoneyGram. He does the baseball field in Arlington. He's got his own business. He handles all of that. He's really done a lot of good for us. We have to continue to have debt in Richland's eyes. Basically, we started with the 10 fields. We built those. Then we put lights. We got a loan and put lights on 9 and 10. Then the next loan was lights on 1, 5, 6, and 7. Then we turned around and renovated the 4 or 5 auxiliary fields into the 8 fields that are the small fields now and fenced those in. We fenced in 9 and 10. Last year, we overhauled the irrigation system and the building. The building's 5 years old, and it was falling apart. New roof, new AC unit, new electrical, the whole 9 yards. And we take care of Field 10 for them. That's their playing field, and they want it the best, and that's our job. If we keep them happy, they're happy with us, and we go on.
I think we built that maintenance shed, and I know we picked up more equipment as well along the way.
Yeah, we picked up a lot of equipment. We used to borrow theirs, and then after the second contract, they said, you need to get your own equipment. So we've invested in a lot of equipment there and upgraded tremendously over the last few years.
And the field lining robot.
We have a robot now that lines our fields. We've upgraded all our equipment. And as long as they see us putting, and we have one with our baseball field too. We line it for them sometimes. So they take care of us. We take care of them. We have a great relationship with their field crew. They help us out when there's huge water leaks or something that are not directly related but cause problems for us. They've cut wires before and they fixed it all. And I work well with the AD. They've had a new AD there now for several years. And we have a very good relationship working together, and as well as with the Richland coaches.
I find it impressive that you've been able to do all this and go belly up. There's a lot of leagues throughout the country, not just here in DFW, that have struggled over the years. And you just see them collapse and new ones pop up to replace them. And there's a lot of growing pains. And from the sounds of it, you have done a very good job at maintaining the league and maintaining your stance in the community. With that being said, I'm very much, I like my rules and I like to read through rules. I read laws of the game very heavily. The first app I read in my morning is not Facebook or my work email. It is Laws of the Game. Now it's not anything else. And before my son started playing in the league, I went through and read the handbook or all the bylaws of the association and of the league. And then I read through all the laws that you guys have in place for playing. I know some of them are from instances going on with the current environment or things that you've seen that couldn't make things better for play for the league. How do you enforce all the rules you have in place, from pennies to jerseys matching? I know that there's every spring, every fall, there is a catch up because no one can get uniforms in time. How do you enforce all these rules and policies that you have?
Go for it, Rob.
You bet. So first, Ian, if you're reading the laws of the game and you're reading our rules, Joe, you need to reach out for a board member. Right. There we go, right there. We brush up on our laws. Yeah, and I'll talk with Susan. We'll get him badged pretty quickly, and we'll see him out running the touch lines in between his son and daughter's matches. That's fantastic. I think I wish more parents actually read the laws of the game. It would make everybody's life much easier. So rules are there to be a set of instructions or guidelines that will outline what's allowed, what's not allowed, and how things are done in the event that the rules are broken. And you touched on it. Our association works off of two sets of rules. The first is the IFAB laws of the game, which are set forth to govern soccer matches equally across the world. And then the second set of rules that we work by are truly what the association has. And those are written guidelines for the league, primarily to protect and provide a safe playing environment for the players and then the parents and the participants who are out there. Some of our rules are super simple. Don't walk across the fields. Please. That's a safety issue, right? You never know what's going to happen. Balls flying in from different directions. Just please don't walk across the fields. Some rules are as simple as don't warm up in the 18-yard box. We don't need wear and tear on the field. It could be as simple as please sit across from your team's bench so that we can easily identify what group of parents there are in the event that something goes haywire. The rules could be as common as rules regarding the rostering of the teams, the rostering of the players, club pass players, the consequences for playing ineligible players, rules regarding uniforms and colors, who wears what, who changes in the event of a conflict. And all of those rules are designed to actually make match play. And for example, this year, Classic League made a change. We used to have a white or light policy for uniforms. And teams, clubs were pushing the boundary of what light truly was. They wanted to have multicolor lights, these stripes and patterns and fades. And maybe light was not necessarily white or gray anymore. As a board, we said, okay, that's fine. Go ahead and you can have whatever colors you want to have as long as you have two different kits. And don't forget, bring two different kits to each match. That created some ripple of difficulty this year with the teams. And we ended up with teams that were wearing equally dark uniforms or equally light uniforms, which makes it more difficult on the officials on the field. Somebody didn't bring their alternate kit and two teams that have a similar blue. Now one player who's their star, something or other, he no longer has the ability to play. We don't allow pennies on the field except for the event of a goalkeeper. And so we're actually going to go back next year to white or light, and we're going to provide additional clarification as to what light truly is. I think it'll make it easier on everybody, but we're still a flexible board, right? You're right. We make laws and rules in reaction to events that take place and have to put some sort of enforcement in place for those actions. And I think it's also important to note our rules. We're a competitive association. We're not a recreational play league. And so with the increased level of play, you also get an increase in the number of rules, the types of rules, and the severity of the punishment for those rules. So how do we enforce those rules? if we don't see it or know about it, we can't enforce it. And we have board members on duty out at the complexes at any time. We can have, I got to do quick math. We can have 23 matches in play every hour and a half. Okay. We run over 4,000 matches in a playing year. So that's a lot to cover and a lot to patrol. So we do have board members who serve on duty, and their job is to be the liaison and the face of the league at that particular day and to make note of rule infractions or difficulties with teams or matches or players. And they report back to the A&D committee, and we handle it from there. We also have field coordinators that are on site, and they primarily work with the referees and the teams and what happens in the event of a conflict or a rule breakage. And then we also have the referee crews there as well, and they provide post-match incident reports as to the events that take place within a match. And so we gather all of that information, and from there, we focus on what rules, if any, were broken, what rule we have within our association that they may have violated, and what the remedy or the sanction may be for those particular infractions.
That's a lot. As a parent sitting on the sideline, I found it comical. So the first weekend, I told Suma this when I first met her, is we're sitting there, and my son has a ponytail. Like, he has the side shave. It looks like Holland. Haircut, and he had a pink hair tie, or not pink hair tie, he had a light blue hair tie, and his their kits are dark blue and white. And the one of the officials says he'll have to let it bypass this time, and he has to have white or matching of his kit, so white or black pretty much. And it's like, are they really making a big stink about that? But they aren't making a big stink about the teams that don't have the correct bibs for the substitutions. Or And Suma's like, no, that's not the case. It's just a misspoke. And I found it, like, I shared it with my son. He's like, I can wear a pink one. No, be polite. And
he could.
He could. Yeah. But I'm like, be polite. But we are very much rule-following people, and we want to not ruffle the feathers of anyone. And having to redo his hair because someone doesn't like it, it affects the mode of your state of mind at 10 years old. I don't care what level. You could be 30 years old and playing soccer still. Yeah. It does affect the state of mind. So we always tell them, just wear your white one. It's fine for either or. But those are the type of things I find infuriating because, like I said, we like our team managers that we work with are very much, here's the law, here's it black and white, and then there's... Mm-hmm. And like when much like the laws of the game, there's the spirit of the law, and it's a matter of finding where you can sit and where you won't ruffle feathers. And me as a parent, I tend to ruffle feathers for some strange reason, and because I'm more black and white when it comes to certain things. And when it comes to some stuff, it's like, I can't believe it. My wife and I were talking. It's not just our games. We've been to multiple games where they can go rent a soccer ball because they don't have theirs or they forgot them. And they'll turn to the other parent coach. Do you have your balls? Like, our manager always brings our soccer balls. Either doesn't matter if we're home or away, and she always has it. And then she has the spare in her car. And it's because we are, like I said, like we're very much rule followers. And then you get to a coach, that's how we forgot our ball. The ref turns to our coach and says, "I'm using my team as the example," and turns to our coach and says, "They'll have to run to." The office to go rent a ball for the game. And I'm like, but here we have our ball. It's like, how does the officials relegate those type of issues in the background? Do they put it in their notes? Because at the end of the day, that does affect people's attitudes.
Our best officials, our top level officials, and I guess it's important. This is a great place to note this. I know we'll probably get to the type of officials that we have a little bit later, but I'd say our top officials within the league they'll note that on the match, right? So not only do our top officials work for Boys Classic League, they also work for U.S. Club Soccer. They also referee for MLS Next. Some of them are even advanced beyond that. So you get UPSL, you get college. There's a lot of different type of officials out there. And we have... And then the way U.S. soccer has broken it down, there are a lot of grassroots officials and a lot of first-year officials. We have officials that have come from other countries that have landed in Dallas and North Texas. And so their interpretation or understanding of some of the nuances are a little bit different. But every morning before we go out, we have a referees meeting. This is what to look for. Remind them of this. Any sort of thing that falls out of the normal, please call the office so that we can come up there and we can take care of it. We want to take the burden off the officials. We don't need them to be the bad guy all the time. So we're happy to step in and say, hey, look, this is actually the rule. This is why it was written. This is what you need to do. And then every league, you're going to get some officials who are just like, you know what, let's speed this up. I'm already behind. It's going to take him 20 minutes to run up there and grab a ball. In their mind, it's easier just to borrow yours. Let's play. And so that should not be the case. By rule, every team's supposed to have a ball. Every home team's supposed to provide the ball. And if they don't provide one, they're supposed to go get one. And you can only play with one ball. So we have a sponsor for the ball. So there's some advantages and disadvantages that way. But I would say that if you've had that experience, definitely let us know, because we always want to get better. The one thing we wanted our officials to be consistent in the application of the different league rules, for sure. That's what makes Boys Classic League the Classic League, the type of association that it is. So I think that's important to know. It's frustrating that you have that experience. So.
Everyone, I'm not going to say too much here on the closing other than go take your time and go read up on Classic League. Go take your time to put your information into a search engine and see what they have to say. There is a lot of information out there, a lot of misinformation on Classic League. I will say that there is a good chance that if your kids are playing here in DFW, they, especially the boys' side, they will come across Classic League and try to get in. And I will tell you, it's a battle to get in. Hey, everyone. If you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review. Share this. Share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.